Hello, good afternoon, and welcome to Kids Stuff. Today's episode of Resounding Echoes. The late and still missed great Irish comedian Dave Allen was once asked in an interview if it was true that he had started out life as a journalist, to which Dave replied, as only Dave could have, "No, it's not true. I actually started out life as a child." Music from the insanely, feverishly, explosively creative first years of the Soviet Union. That was composed by Alexander Mosolov, although Edison Denisov probably deserves almost as much credit as he magically realized the orchestration. Mosolov was only in his mid-20s when he wrote that, but his compatriot and the composer of our next piece was 4 years his junior. In the 1920s, in the realm of Homo Sovieticus, to be young was seemingly very heaven indeed. That was from the Chamber Symphony of Gavril Popov, a piece written for the unusual combination of flute, clarinet, bassoon, trumpet, violin, cello, and double bass. And for anyone who thinks that music written in a specific key is anathema to this program and doesn't stand a chance of getting a look in, that Chamber Symphony was written in an emphatic and resounding C major and exudes complete originality and individuality in every bar. It wouldn't be right to leave this opening salvo of Soviet music from the 1920s without some good old-fashioned agitprop. Next up, we have more music from the world of the young. That alchemist of sound, Charles Quéclin, was inspired to create a series of works throughout the course of his life based on Mr. Kipling's exceedingly popular Jungle Book, or in this particular case, the second Jungle Book, as we are going to listen to a small fragment from Kekland's interpretation of the spring running, in which Mowgli experiences his sexual awakening in the warmth of the jungle's nocturnal perfumed embrace. Believing his new found arousal to be a form of poison, he takes off on a mad dash through the night until he finally arrives spent at the shore of a lake where he and Kekland's music contemplate the forces of life and their mysterious power over us. That piece had an extremely long gestation. As the composer fascinatingly put it, the fear that the work would only be a shadow of how he had dreamed it meant that its completion had to wait until he felt he was technically up to the task of doing justice to his imagination, which he felt he wasn't when he first had the inspiration to compose the piece decades earlier. Continuing our theme of music inspired by the far from childish or superficial imaginary world of children, and proving that great artists are very often those very individuals who manage to retain the full force of that very imaginary power all through their adult lives without ever selling out like most adults on their infant dreams. Our next piece comes from a master in his 70s, taking inspiration from the page of a local newspaper meant for the 7-year-olds. From an old Czech master to one 40 years his junior, but one who sadly, due to the already in these years rising tide of fascism and putrescent anti-Semitism, was destined to die much younger than his elder compatriot in a Nazi hell. And to complete my Czech triumvirate for today, I have some more microtonal music, A microtonal mother, no less. One in quarter tones, to be precise. That was taken from Alois Chabas' opera Matka. On these programs, I have played excerpts from some operas. I could have very well played many more, but I find the fragmentary nature of the music I am allowed to play here even more of a problem when wishing to present an opera than I do with other forms of music. And so I have had to leave many operas out of the reckoning so far, for not being able to find a way to do them justice. For example, one opera that certainly deserves to be featured here is Juha by Are Mericanto, but it deserves an entire program, so maybe that could be a future series, who knows. Mericanto wrote a series of extraordinary pieces all through the 1920s, culminating in the most extraordinary of all, his symphonic study of 1928. All of these pieces were met by varying degrees of rejection and disinterest. Finland, still reeling from a particularly harrowing and bitter civil war, seemingly was more interested in or needed music that provided old comforts and certainties. So misunderstood and isolated did Mericanto feel by the time he composed his symphonic study, that he destroyed parts of the score himself. Indeed, we only have the complete piece thanks to the reconstructive work of his pupil Paavo Heininen, who realized the enormous worth of this singular work long after Mericanto's death. Mericanto thought parts of the score were unplayable, and I don't know if he meant this as an admonishment to himself, as some kind of reproach for his inability to write more popular music, or his fellow musicians of the time for their conservatism and musical ineptitude. Either way, the history of this piece highlights just how much modern music has depended on extremely talented and devoted musicians to make the seemingly unplayable and unlistenable not only eminently playable, but lovable. It is one thing to take the time and make the effort to play a score correctly. It is another entirely to pour your heart and soul into it. Many composers throughout the 20th century struggled to find such enlightened and dedicated interpreters. On that note, whilst I was preparing this program, I became aware of the passing of a compatriot of Are Merikanto's who literally lived and breathed music, namely Leif Segerstam, a man who referred to his nearly 400 symphonies as sperm. By coincidence, I first got to know the two purely orchestral scores in today's programme from recordings made by Segerstam, released on LPs in the 1980s. I don't know anything about Leif Segerstam the man, his two ex-wives and five children are the people best qualified to talk about that. But for what it is worth, here are some words from Robert Trevino, who studied conducting under Segerstam, which I think are interesting in the context of our times and as regards what I said last week about the despairing degree of uniformity in the world today. I quote, "He regarded our art form as one of the last frontiers in the fight against the ever-growing complacency and desire for mediocrity in the world. Leif experienced enormous difficulty in these last years, certainly as a man who would speak his mind without inhibitions. We live in an age where we speak of freedom, but in fact, most of us in the classical music world are anything but free to speak either a personal truth or a challenging thought without risk of cancellation. He couldn't stand stupidity, ignorance, laziness, or a general lack of curiosity in life. He was exceptional in the truest sense of the word, and he was both unwilling and unable to reduce himself to fit other people's comforts or inabilities. He hated false sentimentality, but he was deeply sentimental. A single note expressed without intention could make him furious. A bird singing in the park would make him cry. I felt it must have been hard to be him in a world which doesn't really know what to do with highly sensitive and intelligent people of his kind. In our world, by contrast, brutes can thrive, and if he met any, he would happily and forcefully scream at them at the top of his brilliant tenor voice." And that's all I have for today's program. So once again, thank you all for listening. And if you enjoyed anything you heard there, please tune in again next time for more Resounding Echoes.